Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to today's podcast, which is on the subject of the pros and cons of putting your practice on the market, whether to sell or not to sell. And I'm very pleased today to be joined by Raj Patel, who is a Regional Healthcare Relationship Manager for Wesleyan Bank. Hi Raj, I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Certainly Nigel, yes. I've been with Wesleyan Bank for 3.5 years. I've been sort of providing funding solutions to dentists whilst I've been here. Prior to that, I've done 24 years within financial services. So I've worked for 15 years with Santander Corporate Commercial Banking. Before that, I did 8 years with Derbyshire Building Society. So I've got lots of experience in providing sort of advice to the dental community. And to the wider community as well.
So my guess is you've seen a few changes to the marketplace in that time. So how buoyant is the dental market at the moment?
The dental market is very buoyant and vibrant. I mean, there's been a number of surveys which have come out, certainly the ones which we tend to rely on NASDAQ surveys. We've seen goodwill practice valuations jump up to about 53%, certainly in the last year. Goodwill dental practice values have increased by about 26%, and certainly in the last quarter of 2017 they're showing a similar trend by about 26-27%. So with lots going on in the marketplace, certainly there is confidence. I think I would say confidence with a small c, bearing in mind we've had obviously the Brexit scenarios as well, but I think I don't realistically think that that's really had a major impact. I think lots of people are waiting, obviously, for Theresa May to invoke Article 50, but it's a question of waiting and seeing. But realistically, it's not affected, I think, the ability for a lot of dentists to start sort of looking to sell their practices, and there is certainly lots of demand there to actually acquire a lot of these practices.
So if you're one of those dentists that is starting to think about putting your practice on the market, what sort of things should you undertake as preparation for that stage?
Okay, I would certainly say it's a bit like if you're looking to sell your house, what do you do? Well, you know, the first thing is to prepare. So I would also say have an established sort of business plan. And that business plan is about having established and trusted advisors you can go to, because this it is a journey of selling a dental practice. It isn't going to be sold within a very sort of short period of while. If it is, it's fantastic. But the reality is it probably takes about 6 months to maybe 8 months or even to a year. So the key is to really surround yourself with trusted advisors. We're talking about accountants, we're talking about solicitors, certainly selling agents, because you will obviously need to market your dental practice, and certainly your financial advisors as well, because you know there's got to be reasons why you want to sell. So you know, what is your motivation for selling? It might be the fact that you are actually retiring. It might be through ill health. It might be that you've been given a fantastic opportunity by either a corporate or one of the associates or somebody else, and an offer you can't really refuse. So the first thing I would certainly say is to get your house in order, and I think the first thing people will look at is your set of accounts, your trading figures. So get your finances certainly in order. So talk to your accountants. Get your accounts up to date. We're talking about management figures. We're talking about at least 3 years set of accounts. Just brush them up, because these are the areas potential buyers will want to look at. And what you don't want is obviously errors or gaps where or question marks which agents and solicitors and accountants may pick up on.
So that's quite an important point there, Archie. If you need 3 years of decent accounts and you haven't got them at the moment, then you actually need to be thinking 4 years, 5 years ahead of when you want to sell.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But this is where you speak to your accountant. So you might have a set of accounts now. It's about making sure that, you know, the viability of those accounts will stack up, because if you flip it on the other side, if I were a buyer looking to actually purchase, the first thing is to say, Nigel, can I have a look at your set of accounts? And if the figures are just not there, you might be telling me one thing, but you know the documentary evidence is in the set of accounts. So we need to make sure those kind of sort of areas are actually sort of sorted. So we're talking about sort of turnover figures. We're talking about certainly your NHS schedules, your vital signs reports, CQC compliance. You know, are you compliant? Because that's obviously a big area. NHS contracts, your UDA values. We talked about any clawbacks. Are there any clawbacks? If there are, you need to give a satisfactory explanation as to why you've got clawbacks, because if I were a potential buyer, I'd want to ask those questions. And you'll certainly get those, especially through the agents. So those, I would certainly say, as a starting point, first of all, you know, get your finances up to date. You then want to start looking at sort of maintaining up-to-date records. And this is about building buyer confidence in your practice, as well as, you know, potentially for your future exit strategy. So key documents includes having, you know, patient lists containing historical analyses of trends and current details of associates' contracts, you know, service contracts and other overheads. I'm a great believer in visuals as well. So you know perfectly well people will come out and actually see your dental practice. Well, does your practice need, I would say, airbrushing? Does it need painting? Does it do some of your machinery? We're talking about, I call it cosmetic spring cleaning, and keeping with that particular theme, it's upgrading any of your existing sort of furniture. It's about that, giving you that spring clean anyway, to make it marketable and acceptable. Planning is important. You know, as I said earlier, you know, sale would probably take 4 to 6 months. So I'm a great believer in giving the seller an organized, you know, give the seller an organized impression of a well-run practice, because you'll be able to answer lots of questions they'll have anyway, and it just breeds confidence. Yeah. You know, if they've come in, and you're able to get access to the information they're asking for, fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. As you say, improving buyer confidence has got to then ultimately improve the value you can derive for your practice.
So absolutely.
That makes perfect sense. So, I mean, this is probably a daft question, because it's really just a flip of everything you've been saying, but are there common pitfalls that you encounter when people are trying to sell their practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the key pitfalls is really to really understand the offer which has been made to you. So it might be somebody's offered you a realistic, in their eyes, a realistic asking price, which perhaps doesn't reflect your own sort of value, and you'll be guided by obviously the agents and your advisors, your trusted advisors, accountants. And if they perhaps, and you've had it on the market for at least 3 months, 4 months, and that's the first offer, I think there's a temptation, isn't there, to say, I'll actually take this particular offer. But I think at times you sometimes have to say no and just walk away. So the first offer, you know, is it realistic? Does it match your expectations? Take guidance. But also, the people making the offer, are they bona fide in the sense that have they arranged their finances? Are they in a position realistically to actually provide you with the ability to actually buy your dental practice? And we've had instances where people have made offers and then they've had valuations done and the values have actually valued up, but then they've gone back with a slightly different offerings, and that might be because the lending itself isn't in place, or perhaps the bank itself has seen something which perhaps makes them nervous based on the ability of the borrower, not the dental practice. But that sometimes doesn't come over.
So does that mean that you end up with a few false starts, if you like, you want to avoid that?
And that's one of the reasons for having sort of agents. I think agents will actually manage that particular process. They're a third party, and often, you can perhaps point them in that direction. They will then perhaps turn down some bids which have perhaps come in, and they will negotiate on your particular behalf as well. One of the other areas, I mean, common pitfalls you were talking about is really to look at things like freehold defects. So, for example, if you're selling the freehold of your business as well, and you know perfectly well there are areas, maybe there's subsidence or whatever, which will be picked up by valuers or the surveys which are going to be carried out. You might as well get the works done instead of waiting for the process to start and then we have hiccups later on in the process where it's picked up by the solicitors or the potential buyers. Or even the bank who may once they've had a look at the valuation say actually we now need further sort of reports being done. So you might save yourself a lot of money in the long run by actually getting the works done. And this is part of the earlier discussion we're having of cosmetic spring clean. Leases, that's another one. So your strategy might be, why do you want to sell? Because perhaps the lease is finishing within 2-3 years. I would probably say you probably want to negotiate your lease with your potential landlord, even though you've got an exit strategy. When the potential purchasers are there, looking at the short lease, that tends to put off a lot of banks because they do want a long lease. Mm-hmm. If you had those discussions with the landlord, at least you planted the seed and really established the answer. The answer might be yes, they're prepared to increase the lease, whoever it may be. So it might be that you continue beyond that 3 years, or somebody else who's buying the particular dental practice will have the ability to actually increase the lease. The other one is valuations. You will need a valuation. So it's about, get to know your local agents. So we're talking about dental agents who are out there in the community. They will know the locality, the local areas. So it's about having, the trust. And it might be that, you've called 2-3 agents and you'll certainly see a difference in price valuations as well. And it's typical of any estate agent, which is they want the business. But I think again, you've got to be realistic and really establish the parameters as to how they're actually valued that particular dental practice. So it's again you gaining confidence from the agents. So again, just don't go with the first agent. I would say shop around.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the point that you were making earlier, Raj, about the fact that you need to feel confident in the potential purchaser. So with that in mind, are there pros and cons about working with or potentially selling to an individual dentist versus one of the corporates you mentioned as being a potential option?
Absolutely. I would say, first of all, what is your motivation to sell? If your motivation to sell and carry on your legacy, so it might be retirement. So if you want to sell to a dentist, it might be your associate, it might be another dentist. I know lots of deals where principals have actually just decided carte blanche that they don't want to sell to a corporate because they want their value, their own ethos, the identity which they've worked very hard on creating, and the goodwill value in the business for it to carry on with an individual dentist or a not a corporate. The main advantage really is the you'll have the ability to to work with that particular potential buyer. You might even decide to stay on as an associate, so you might be able to agree your own terms and work reduced hours. And you know, it's really about your confidence in the dentist who's buying your practice, because you'll probably share their vision, or they will share your vision, and they'll buy into your into your practice, which you've been running for a number of years. So I mean, that probably is probably one of the reasons for going with an individual. They might even offer you, obviously, flexible terms in terms of the actual payment structure. We've done several deals where the dentist has taken 80% of the value of the actual sale, but stayed on and been paid off at different points in time. So what they've had is they've effectively had their cake, which is 80% of the value of the sale, still working on reduced hours, and then the exit strategy is worked according to their own terms, and they've been there to actually mentor the associates or the new dentists, and that's worked quite nicely because it's a smooth transition on both sides.
So when it comes to things like the corporates, how big an influence do their purchasing patterns have? I mean, my dentists are currently not actively buying. So has that caused any ripples?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my dentists are pulling out of the market. I think there might be several reasons for those. I recently came across a deal whereby basically they were pulling out because they couldn't hit the actual UDA values, so they decided to sell the dental practice. But you know, one of the advantages going with a corporate is that the actual sale might be a lot smoother, a lot quicker, a lot easier, and sometimes, and there is a perception that they will actually pay you a slightly higher sort of going rate than what is out on the open market. But I always think it's tempered with some of the strings which might be attached to selling to a corporate. So a corporate might give you a higher value, but there are ties and restrictions that are actually put in to the sales. So part of that would be that you'll be expected, I think, to work at least 12 months. If that is part of the agreement, your income levels will certainly drop. And if the numbers are not hitting the required levels, I think you'll probably see that the deferred element, which they've held back, that will be reducing as well. So, you know, if you wanted a quick sale, the machine takes over because they are so slick at moving in fairly quickly, putting their own identity, then certainly I think you've got a corporate who might be keen to buy it. But certainly some of the bigger ones like my dentist, I think that they've probably reached probably a saturation point, and they're now sort of pulling out of the market anyway. But that's not affected, I think, confidence at all. I think on the contrary, it's given perhaps a smaller individual owners who are running 2-3 practices to say, well, let's go on a growth spurt. Let's buy those kind of dental practices themselves.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Raj. That's been absolutely fascinating listening to all that advice. I think there's a number of points there that I certainly hadn't picked up on before when it comes to what you need to consider when you come to sell your practice. So I think it's been a very informative session. So thank you very much indeed, Raj.
Okay, thank you.